Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood,
Matthew Davis,
and the Roto Gut, Vlad Sedler.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Vlad Sedler, and unfortunately, my co-host, Matty Wood, is out sick. In fact, he's lost his voice and therefore probably wouldn't be very, very good on the podcast today. So instead, I have an incredibly special guest. He is very well known in the fantasy baseball Twitter sphere for his poignant and no-nonsense takes. He's a celebrity in the world of Canadian politics, a recovered attorney, though occasionally still plays one on Twitter, and he's a former NFBC main event overall title winner and NFBC Hall of Famer. He is my good friend, Mr. Rob Silver. What's going on, Rob?
Hey, Vladdy. First off, I am not in the NFBC Hall of Fame. Their standards are way too high for me to be there. So I don't want to take away in any way anything from anybody who's actually in the Hall of Fame. Second of all, like hearing about Matty, you know, there was once a first baseman who was too sick to play in a baseball game, Vlad. And I don't know how it turned out for him when somebody else showed up to take his job for just a day. No, I hope Matty gets better. And it looked like he had a great time watching the Dodgers Cubs on his social media feed this past weekend. So I hope I hope he's okay.
Yeah, new resident of the area. I think he's about 40 miles out. And so, I mean, yeah, he's already seen more games this weekend than I've been to in like a year. So good for him. Yeah. And then the Wally Pipp thing is funny because about a month ago I had Paul Sporer fill in for me, and that was the joke on that day that I was getting replaced. So obviously either of you two would be.
Unlike being a Yankees first baseman, we are all so eminently replaceable, Vlad, and we need to remind ourselves every single day that we can all be very quickly replaced. But I am so excited to be here. We talk on our text thread hundreds of times every single day, but this is the first time I've actually had a chance to talk to you since Vegas. So it's great to actually be able to talk some baseball with you for an hour here today, bud.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Today we are going to run through the divisions one by one, take a look at how the standings are going, the fantasy impacts on the offensive end there. But just real quick, telling you guys about our sister site, FTN Bets. We're currently running a promotion for our monthly Diamond membership. It covers all sports betting. So for just $49.99, that's $20 off at the moment, which you can cancel anytime. You have access to all the betting picks for all sports, including baseball, football, golf. We got playoffs for hockey and for basketball. And FTN Bets has a parlay odds comparison tool, parlay calculator, a prop shop that allows you to shop prop bets from different books. For baseball, you get access to our strikeout model, our home run model, which I used the other day to kind of help my DFS lineups. And if you're just into betting or want to improve your craft at all, it might be worth checking us out, ftnbets.com/pricing. So let's jump in to the divisions. And the very first one is, I think, one that's very special to your heart. And for whatever reason, and obviously I like the Blue Jays, but now I've kind of loved them outside of the Angels. They're basically my AL team. And a lot of that has to do with, obviously, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who might be my favorite baseball player in the world. Obviously, big fan of Bo Bichette and some of the other guys there. But just as far as that division and how it's going, the Yankees are crushing everybody. They got the best record in the American League, the highest run differential, over 50 runs as of through Tuesday's games, I believe. And your beloved Blue Jays, they're hanging in there. So are the Rays. And just to kind of cover all the bases there, the Orioles actually have a better record than the Boston Red Sox. But so just jumping real quick to the Jays, you got Springer off to a nice start. He's tied with Vladdy with 7 home runs. Guerrero kind of feels like he's cold, a little bit quiet. His 7 home runs leads the team with 19 RBIs, hitting 280 something. And I know that it feels like some of that has come in just a couple of games. He had a couple of really big games, which when you see his other box scores, you see a lot of 0-for-4s. And I mean, you know, nothing to really worry about, but kind of the rest of the team there. You got Teoscar Hernandez is back from his oblique issue. Danny Jansen's on the way back. And so, yeah, I'm just, you know, how do you feel about the Blue Jays? Do you think they have a shot at the division?
it's been a weird start to the Blue Jays season, Vlad, because on the one hand, other than arguably Kevin Gausman, and until last night, and we're recording here Wednesday night, Jordan Romano, who has been brilliant until he got blown up against the Yankees in heartbreaking fashion last night. But he's been great. Other than Gausman and Romano, it's been such a frustrating season. They just aren't clicking on all cylinders, and yet they're hanging in there. They're winning a lot of close games. Manoah's been great too. It's not fair to Manoah. Manoah's been fantastic. The offense has, for such a good lineup, they have really struggled. Like they have really. I mean, you would see it playing DFS more than somebody who plays season long, because obviously, if you have these guys in season long, other than in an NFBC format where they only have two games, you know, Monday to Thursday, and you can start depending on what your bench looks like, you might be benching some of these guys in the short week right now. For the most part, you're just playing them, and you have to play them because they're too good and the lineup is too good. But it's been very frustrating. So the fact that they are doing record-wise as well as they have been, despite the fact that they haven't been clicking on all cylinders, is really encouraging, right? Like this is if you're a fan of a team, this is what you want. With Vlad, he got hit in the hand about, I want to say, 3 weeks ago. And I think if you trace back to him getting hit by a pitch in the hand, he was off for one day, then he came right back. I think he's playing a little bit hurt. I think it's impacted his swing, and I think it's not black or white. He's still great. He's still capable of hitting. I'm not saying, like, if you're in a trading league, trade Vlad. I'm not saying you should start sitting Vlad. And I'm not worried about Vlad. But I think I think you can trace his current struggles, quote unquote, back to that. Bo's been swinging the bat a lot better lately. I'm not worried about Bo Bichette. People on Twitter and stuff who are saying Bo Bichette's crap are wrong. He's fantastic. I'm not worried one bit about Bo Bichette. So I think the Jays lineup is going to be fine. Adding Teoscar in there once he gets going just adds so much length and depth to that lineup that was clearly lacking. Mr. Collins was a nice little $1 catcher for a week there, but he ain't your cleanup hitter. He isn't the guy you want DHing long term if you're hoping to hang with the Yankees or Tampa. So adding Teoscar there, getting Danny Jansen back. Once they have that whole lineup back, like when you can have a Chapman as your eighth place hitter, that's pretty good. That'll work. That's Dodgers-esque in terms of lineup length. So I think it's going to still. I'm still very optimistic about the Jays. I think it's going to be a really fun summer in Toronto.
Yeah, and they had that phenomenal start to the season, obviously, and Jordan Romano was racking up those saves and. Obviously, the pitching looks good. Even Yusei Kikuchi has been stepping it up lately, back-to-back smashes of the Yankees, which is really nice to see, most likely on most people's benches, because I don't think a lot of people are playing Kikuchi at the Yankees. So what about one thing I wanted to mention there was the way everything just kind of lined up nicely with the ballparks for them last year, kind of, you know, back to baseball, and you had Buffalo there, you had Florida, Dunedin. And things went really nicely for them when George Springer went down. Marcus Semien stepped up and had that magical career season. Odd that he still does not have a home run this year, although I haven't checked my lineups yet. And then I wanted to ask you about Alejandro Kirk, obviously somebody that I have been big on for a while. And, I mean, he's just I know he's hitting the ball. It's not really bouncing his way, but he just doesn't have any numbers to show for it. I feel like at some point – I hope that people come to the point of wanting to drop them. I know in my sharp leagues and NFBC 15 teamers, that's probably not going to happen. But I would love for something like that to happen to catch Kirk when he gets on a bit of a hot streak. But like, I think he's got five or six RBIs. Like he's just not, there's just aren't guys on base for him. And part of that was that little glut with, not having Teoscar there for a bit. So how do you see things working out with him and then Danny Jansen when he returns? He was hitting 571 through three games there.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kirk has had some struggles, has had some bad luck. He's walked more times than he struck out. I don't know if he's the only player in baseball right now who can claim that, but he's one of a few players who can still make that claim. So the hit tool is still, for a catcher, elite. For almost any player, he's elite. I think the power will come. I think he's still going to get double digit home runs. He was dropped in one of my 15-team main event leagues this past weekend. And because he had a hot week last week, batting average-wise, certainly, he went for a fair bit. But yeah, if he starts getting dropped in like 12 teams in online-type championship-type leagues or 10-team two-catcher leagues, he's a bit more marginal. But certainly in a 12-team league, if you're streaming a catcher and Kirk gets dropped, I would be all over him. And if people are getting scared because Jansen is coming back, I still think that the way the roster is made up right now, and it can change at the trade deadline, Kirk is going to DH 3-4 times a week. He's going to catch 1 or 2 times a week. And as we both know, unless your name is Sal Perez, No catcher is playing more than 5-6 times a week, right? JTL Real Muto isn't playing more than 5-6 times a week. So getting 5 to 6 games out of your catcher is what you're looking for. Like, if you can get that and he's not killing you and you think the production's going to come, that's all you can ask from your catcher spot.
Last question on the Blue Jays, actually two, is first of all, who is going to, just a quick fire, who's going to lead this team in home runs?
I still think it's Vlad, and I know that's like the chalk bet and maybe the boring answer. I'm not worried about him at all. Springer's the kind of guy, though, if Springer gets going this summer as it gets hot and the roof opens up in Toronto, like, would it shock you if Springer ends up with 40 home runs, Vlad?
No, not at all. I mean, he's hit, 39 in 100 games before.
Yeah. So like, I don't know how much money I'd bet that Vlad's going to lead, but if you put the gun to my head right now, as you obviously have right now, as we podcast from opposite ends of the continent, I'd still say Vlad. I think he's going to get super hot this summer, and I'm not worried about him. And I'll go with the safe, boring bet.
And the final question is because, yeah, obviously I know my Dodgers and pay attention to them so much better, and you with the Blue Jays, I know that we sometimes give each other crap about you're kind of favoring this guy. Oh, you only like Kikuchi now because he's a Blue Jay, or, yeah, you know, things like that. But we're also sometimes harder on our own teams. But how does your feel for your team impact your fantasiness? Like, for example, I stubbornly did not listen to you when you kept telling me that Kevon Biggio is Garbaggio. And
It's funny, Vlad. Every year when I get back from Vegas, my wife and now my 10-year-old son ask me, the first question when I get back is, did you draft any Blue Jays? And it's like, it's a sweet, like, welcome home. So did you draft any of our hometown guys? And almost every year when I get home, my answer is no. I draft the best players. I don't draft Blue Jays. And I almost never get Blue Jays on my teams. For whatever reason, I mean, I know the reasons, but they have a lot of really good players right now. Like, who wouldn't like Bobichette? Who wouldn't like Vlad? So this year I had a ton of Blue Jays on my teams. And yeah, I like Kikuchi a lot coming into this year. And it was not looking very good for me for the first month of the season. But yeah, you're right. And I liked Romano also as kind of that second tier closers. I liked him a fair bit. So hopefully last night was an aberration. But yeah, it's a great question. Because you certainly don't fade Dodgers. Like, I know you loved Walker Buehler. You loved Julio Urias. So it's not that you will not draft Dodgers, but you never leave a draft with, like, I have the 2nd through 6th hitter on the Dodgers. I've stacked the Dodgers lineup in this team, right? Like, is that fair?
I mean, I feel the most important thing is to be able to remove my fandom from, you know, from fantasy, right? I mean, it is a business in a way. And so it just so happens I am a fan of a team that is a very good team, a team that has had the best pitching over, you know, the last half decade. And I remember you were even talking about, hey, you can just stack, you know, just draft all the Dodgers pitchers, right? Yeah. A couple years ago, that would have, that's always a good strategy for
holy ratio. Cow. We'll get there. I don't want to jump around divisions. I know you have we're slaves to our outline. Holy cow, the Dodgers rotation has been ridiculous, like historically good so far this year. And what's interesting about it to me this year, about the Dodgers rotation compared to previous Dodgers rotations, because it's not like the Dodgers haven't had great rotations for the last decade, basically the whole Friedman era and before that, I mean, with Kershaw. And for as long as we've been, you and I, us two old men, have been following baseball, the Dodgers have tremendous rotations. It seemed like coming into this year compared to previous years that you could poke holes at pretty much every single guy if you wanted to be critical in the Dodgers rotation, right? Clayton Kershaw, well, we know what the concern is, was his health. You didn't have to be a internet fantasy baseball doctor to say, I have concerns whether Clayton Kershaw can throw 5 innings this year, can throw 10 innings this year. He's obviously been spectacular. If you there were reasons, certainly the public projections looked at Walker Buehler and said, boy, I'm skeptical about Walker Buehler. And there were, and it's like you could disagree and argue the other side, but you could certainly look at Walker Buehler and say, I don't know that he can keep doing what he's been doing. And like the batted ball data may not be sustainable. And you go through all of the guys, and more interestingly to me is the last few seasons, it's like, who's the sixth starter? Who's the seventh starter? Who's the eighth starter on the Dodgers? It's like, my God, how are all these guys going to play? There really isn't that depth this year, and yet they're just killing it. Are you surprised by how well they're doing? Do you think it's sustainable?
It's going to.
They're not going to end with a 1.75 ERA or whatever.
Of course
it is
not.
Right now.
Yeah, and they'll have some rough starts in Colorado. Buehler will get beat up here and there. Same with Urias. Just certain things like. I've never been a Tyler Anderson fan, but you remember me digging into him as soon as I found out that he was traded. I'm like, oh, looking at him and like, okay, take him outside of Coors where he spent basically 67% of his career. And his numbers are actually not that bad. And they're rather similar to Andrew Heaney's. And now he's on the Dodgers. There's just certain pitchers that, you know, hey, oh, they're going to Oakland. They're going to San Francisco. They're going to LA. Okay. Let me take another look and might see something there under the hood that you like. So, but because we're probably not going to get through all six divisions, let me ask you real quick about the Red Sox.
Sure.
They're obviously struggling big time offensively. Yeah. Rafael Devers and Bogarts are really the only two guys hitting. Bogarts hitting over 350 right now, not for a lot of power, just a couple of home runs, but just really amazing contact, great plate discipline. And there's even rumors of if they keep slipping, they'll be sellers sooner than later. There were Bogarts rumors previous to the season, and again now they've been kind of sparking up. But what do you think about this team? Do they bounce back, or they just kind of give up? And then with Trevor Story, who actually hit a home run here on Wednesday off Ian Anderson, Alex Verdugo's hitting 217, and you know obviously he's like a 290 hitter. And then Enrique Hernandez, the ever so streaky former Dodger. Do you like any of those guys as far as like a bounce back and just the Red Sox in general? What's your feel?
So the guy who you didn't mention, who I think the perception is he's really struggling. He's struggling fantasy wise, but he's actually hitting pretty well, is JD Martinez. I think JD Martinez is still going to be fine. And he's a guy who as the season goes on, we're going to wake up one day and JD Martinez is suddenly going to be hitting like 315 and be fourth in the American League in RBIs. And we're going to say to ourselves, how the heck is JD Martinez fourth in RBIs and hitting 315? So I think that if I'm in a trading league and the JD Martinez owner is like, this isn't working. He's old man suddenly. In reality, he's actually hitting really well. I think he has a 140 WRC plus. Like he's hitting really well. The structure of that lineup, though, like, I don't know what they do with Enrique Hernandez long term. He's been a streaky guy, as you say. Mm-hmm. Like in the playoffs last year, he was the best. He had the best short playoff spurt in baseball history, arguably, last year in the playoffs. He was on fire. I thought he was going to maybe carry it forward this year. I guess luckily for me, I didn't get him any drafts, but he can turn it on. Like this weekend, he could go crazy and suddenly his season. We're still early enough that that in one weekend, Enrique Hernandez could be, well, obviously he's the leadoff hitter answer for all time. Our good friend Matt Modica loved Bobby Dalbec going into drafts this season, and he convinced me. He was so passionate about the adjustments that Dalbec made towards the end of last season, that the power was going to carry forward and that he could be an elite power hitter. As of right now, he's in a platoon with Frenchy Cordero at first base. And if I may be offending, I don't think I'm offending you here, Vlad. If Frenchy Cordero is your answer, then I think you're asking the wrong question. Frenchy Cordero is never the answer. So I think that that's got to fix themselves. You cannot compete in the American League East with what they're getting there. Luckily, they have like one of the top prospects in baseball in Casas as first base. So I think a change is likely to come there. I don't know what kind of pictures Jackie Bradley Jr. has of the management in Boston. I know he's a good defensive outfielder, but like that's the thing right now, it feels like, for them, is when you add Enrique and the first base black hole and Trevor Story struggling and Jackie Bradley Jr., suddenly, well, and let's be honest, and when they went up by 6-0 last night, I think I texted the thread saying there's no way the Boston bullpen is going to hold a 6-run lead after one inning, and they almost blew it. And it's like their bullpen is so bad that they need to have a lineup that can win like 14-12 games until they fix the bullpen. And I just don't know that they have they have too many easy outs right now. So I think they've got. Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I was going to say they're getting too cute too on things. Like if you look at their rotation, you've got, you know, Tanner Houck. Oh, he's a starter. He's a reliever. Whitlock. It's like they have no idea what they're doing. And then nobody even wants the closer job. I mean, Hansel Robles has given up runs every day. Matt Barnes has regressed completely. Oh, let's, you know, Diekman doesn't want the role whatsoever. Now they're trying out John Schreiber. Matt Strom got a, you know, a save the other day. Like, you know, I have no idea what's going on. I mean, I remember preseason thinking like Craig Kimbrel would be a great ad, like bring the guy back. You guys don't have a closer. You have bullpen issues, address it. And you know, the rotation's a mess, you know, Rich Hill for four innings. And then, I mean, I have no idea what they're doing. Offense is kind of a mess and I could just see things sort of falling apart except for the, of course,
if there's no doubt, Vlad, if they're anywhere close to where they are now, like give it another 4 weeks. But if we're mid-June and they're where they are, and you have Xander Bogaerts, who I know they'd love to re-sign, and they would think he's a franchise guy, but he's a free agent. You'd be running a reckless franchise if you didn't try to trade him. You have to try to trade him at that point. You know, they're obviously not trading Devers. But the weird thing with this team is beyond Bogaerts, who's great, and you'd get a lot for Bogaerts. I'm not sure what the other pieces are that people are paying for. Like JD Martinez, you know, people don't pay for that skill anymore. But in the right situation for a playoff run, somebody will see JD Martinez and say he can DH for us, and he's still a big bat. But like nobody's trading for Nick Pivetta. Nobody's trading for any of their relievers. Like Christian Vasquez is somebody trading for. I'm not sure what playoff team Christian Vasquez is an upgrade on. So they're in a weird limbo situation, which is, could we be talking, like, could I come on the podcast when Maddie has strep throat again in August and says, like, look at the run that Boston has gone on. They've been the hottest team in baseball for the last 7 weeks. Would that shock me? No. Like, there's enough talent there where obviously that kind of a run is possible. But far more likely is this team's a bit of a mess. A bit of a mess right now. The rotation's bad. The bullpen's bad. And the lineup, at least four of the spots, are bad. When you put all that together, that's not awesome.
While you were talking, I had a vision, and let's see if it comes to fruition. Obviously, it's probably a 5% chance. But before the trade deadline, JD Martinez gets shipped to the Brewers. I feel like he was made for that lineup in that uniform. Nice.
The Brewer, I know we're also jumping around. What do you make of the Brewers lineup? Like you're as a DFS guy, you're looking at them from a different perspective than I am. In terms of just day-to-day matchups, platoons. Whoa. Do you think their lineup, beyond just get beyond the they get to face Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, you know, like they get to feast on then Chicago and they get to feast on some bad pitching. Do you think that lineup, once they're assume their rotation will get going, assume Woodruff is good again, assume everybody in the road that they have an excellent pitching staff. Do they have enough bats right now to hang with the Dodgers, Padres, Giants, Mets kind of teams, do you think?
No, and especially seeing it from a DFS perspective, and actually a tweet I sent about them earlier, the only guy hitting over 250, and I understand everyone's hitting under 250, but the only guy is Christian Yelich.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a big swing and miss team, you just got a bunch of big boppers, you know, all these Hunter Renfro's and Willie Adames is bad, you know, bad rowdy, bad play discipline. Colton Wong's doing all right at the top, but even he's hitting like 220 or something right now, stealing some bases here and there. But yeah, they're kind of missing a big bat there. If you look at the individual names, it's just not sexy at all. And
And you're right. A JD Martinez would provide, like, him hitting after Yelich in the fourth spot would provide so much just kind of stability, for lack of a better word, to that whole lineup, like on base skill and just like not sucking for a week at a time, which is big as you're heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, for just as hot as they've been over the past week, you'll see them cool off at any given time. No, so
playing Cincinnati helps heat up a lot of people right now.
Yeah, it would help us all, including if the Thread had a baseball team that was captained by Ariel Cohen.
No doubt.
AL Central.
Don't go there, Vlad. You're trying to get me in trouble. I'm trying to be nice.
We are being nice. He's a friend of the pod.
We all love Ariel.
Everyone loves Ariel. AL Central, Twins leading the division. Surprising to you? Chicago, White Sox, Cleveland right behind them. Chicago White Sox has been hit hard by the injury bug, but getting a little better. A little rumor there about Eloy Jimenez possibly coming back a lot earlier than expected. And then you've got Detroit and Kansas City, as expected. They're at the bottom of the division, obviously not going to win a lot of games. But are you surprised the Twins are leading this early? I guess nothing surprises you, right, at 6 weeks into the season. But who's going to end up pulling this division out between those what looks like those three teams, Minnesota, Chicago White Sox, and the Cleveland Guardians?
Again, much like my Vlad answer earlier, the boring answer is the White Sox. And I still think that the White Sox are like their top three pitchers. When you look at Giolito, Cease, and Kopech, are as good a top three as any team in baseball, and they're sexy right now. So I know that there are statistically other teams that can match up there, but I think between them, Liam Hendricks, and the bullpen, like, it's been a roller coaster. If you drafted Liam Hendricks in the second round, it hasn't been quite as smooth as the people who drafted Hader in the second round. But I still think Liam Hendricks is going to be fine this year. And as the lineup gets healthy, getting Moncada back, even if you don't love Moncada, even if you don't think he's going to be a superstar, there's no doubt that he's an upgrade on like Hamburger or whoever they were playing at third base before. And obviously they need Eloy, and they will get Eloy back, whether it's 2 weeks from now or a month from now. From a real baseball perspective, Eloy's coming back. So the safe, boring answer is the White Sox. I've been surprised at how Cleveland's lineup has come together. Put their pitching aside. We can talk about their pitching after if you want. Like, Cleveland's lineup to me going into the season was the guy in an auction who spends like $194 in the first 4 minutes. And then he's like, oh my God, I have to fill up a lineup. Who else is left? Because you have J-Ram, who's obviously awesome. You have Franmil, who lots of us, myself certainly included, thought was going to be awesome this year. And then you had a bunch of question marks. You had guys who could be really good, like Ahmed Rosario finished the season really nicely last year and had lots of smart people were all over Rosario. Obviously, you loved Andrés Giménez, and so far you look real smart for loving Andrés Giménez this year. But that outfield just looked so bad. Like, just so, like, how can you not address your outfield, Cleveland? Like, everybody sees you need to do it. And what they've been able to do this year is find a bunch of kind of league average-ish guys, pretty good guys. Stephen Kwan, he's pretty good. He has some really interesting skills. He has some flaws, but he's not awful. Josh Naylor, who's obviously the hottest hitter in baseball the last 3 days, but even getting beyond that, he's a good hitter when he's healthy. He's not great, but he's pretty good. And when you look at and Owen Miller at first, second, wherever, he's playing all over the place.
All strong pedigrees, by the way. Those
totally
guys.
They're not just guys that they're not like Tampa Bay Raying this and finding some guy in the Swedish league and bringing them off the street and dropping them in the lineup. These are all real guys who, you know, in a Naylor case, it was because of a horrendous injury. Kwan was kind of a sleeper, not a typical baseball player, but real hits tools. And suddenly you look at that lineup from like 1 through 8. We won't talk about Austin Hedges, but one through eight, you still have J-Ram. Like, you still have one of the top five, top seven hitters in baseball. Franmil's obviously been struggling, but I still believe that he's going to come around and he's going to get hot and he'll be fine. But it's a no joke lineup right now. And I think it's a pretty legit no joke lineup in a really bad division. So in some ways they're the opposite of what you were saying about Milwaukee. I think Vlad is there. Again, J-Ram is sexy as hell. You can argue Miles Straw is a little bit sexy. You think Giménez is sexy, but they also have just a bunch of boring, pretty good guys who are going to go 1 for 4 every day. Mm-hmm. And occasionally the Naylor will hit a walk-off grand slam, and that's exciting. Mm-hmm. But I think that kind of lets them hang around. And I think even when the White Sox get healthy, as long as Cleveland's rotation is pretty good, it doesn't need to be like an old school Cleveland rotation that's winning it for them. As long as the rotation is pretty good, I don't think Cleveland's going away. I don't know if they have the horses to win this thing in the AL Central, but I don't think the White Sox win the division by 15 games over them either.
They're going to be a pesky thorn in the sides, I think, of the White Sox probably for the course of the year. And then for as bad as Cal Quantrill and Aaron Savali have been, and even Zach Plesac, I mean, he's not as bad as, you know, for all the crap that I've given him. Like, this isn't the worst rotation in the world, like you mentioned. Perhaps Tristan McKenzie continues to kind of show promise, and maybe Shane Bieber bounces back, but the bullpen is pretty solid. I know Spore mentioned this, this 26-year-old, basically the closer in waiting if something were to ever happen to Emmanuel Clase A, Trevor Stephan. I mean, dude looks really, really sharp. But yeah, it's not a bad team. I don't think it's going to win the division. And what it's been really, it is exactly like the opposite of the Brewers. Brewers, you got the big boppers. They're a fun team to play in DFS because you're getting those sexy home runs. Here, it's a different story, right? You're not going to get 10, 15 plus from Miles Straw, Stephen Kwan, Andrés Giménez, Owen Miller, even Josh Naylor may not hit 20, but these guys are going to grind every single day and just and kind of do it. And if you look at it, this is kind of like your all value. This is what we're looking for in fantasy. Those guys that are hitting in the middle of a lineup around some good players like Jose Ramirez and Franmil Reyes that you're able to pluck off early in the season off in Fab, right? You get Kwan a week early, pick up Josh Naylor when he was under 10 bucks, little Owen Miller, and you got something there. You have contributors for the whole season.
The other thing from a fantasy perspective, and it may not be actionable for people anymore, because I would assume that even if you're in a pretty shallow league, all these guys are now owned. They also have really good contact skills. Yep. And you would know this from DFS. Cleveland has the lowest strikeout, second lowest strikeout rate in baseball as a team. But if you look at Naylor, Kwan was well known for this, but Naylor was basically the same guy. if you're just not striking out and you have a decent amount of speed, like just the way the math is going to play out, the likelihood that and Rosario has this, Jimenez has the potential for this. You like guys in fantasy in an environment where suddenly a 250 batting average, like I don't know how your teams are doing batting average, Vlad. I really tried to spend a lot of time this offseason planning batting average, like avoid the suck because it's just so hard to catch up in batting average. So I don't mean just drafting empty batting averages. I was really working trying to structure my teams so that I had like structurally good batting averages on my teams. And of all the things, like looking at these teams that I really left the draft thinking like this is a real legit chance at having like a 270 team batting average. Like this is off the chart batting average. And it's like 239 team batting average, 6 weeks of the season. And it's just, I understand why it is. I get what's going on in the game, but holy cow, it's frustrating. So one of the things that attracted me to Naylor and Kwan a week early, as you said, for cheap bids, was just like, I need batting averages from guys who have the potential to have a little bit of power so they're not killing me power. And if they have a little bit of speed, like Naylor does, like a 7 to 9 stolen base over a full season, that's gold right now. Like that's gold getting guys who are not going to hit 230.
And specifically against right-handed pitching this year, they're actually the best team in baseball. Just looking at WOBA, for example, WRC plus, it's them and the Angels against right-handed pitching, and they're dead last against righties in strikeout rate. In fact, three teams in the AL Central are three of the four lowest strikeout rates against righties are all in the AL Central. It's the White Sox, Cleveland, and KC. But Cleveland has the lowest strikeout rate, 18.7%. That's interesting.
You need to normalize those AL Central strikeout rate numbers, though, for Zach Greinke. You need to remove Zach Greinke from the sample just to make sure that you're talking apples to apples.
Yeah, and then they're there with like Cincinnati.
Yeah.
AL West, let's run through them really quickly. Angels, hot as hell, man, leading the league in home runs, crushing it, leading the division. And then obviously the Astros are just an amazingly well put together team from top to bottom, especially if their closer Ryan Presley's healthy. The rotation is humming. The lineup is fantastic. One of my main events team is a mini Astro stack, which I'm very happy with. I think it's
who do you have stack? Yeah,
go. It's like, Bregman.
Yeah,
Jordan. Mm-hmm. And who was my third on that team? Don't have your boy. No, it's not Tucker. I have an Altuve. Alvarez,
there you go.
Bregman.
That's pretty good. And Altuve has been on fire since he came back from the IL. Mm-hmm.
Hitting bombs.
And I don't know that they lost a game since Altuve came back.
Like they're on like a winning streak.
The Houston with Altuve is a totally different. I mean, understandably, Altuve's he's not what he once was, but he's still pretty great. So that must be fun lately having that Astros stack.
And their platoon and their bench bats are solid, right? You mix in Chaz McCormick with Jose Siri. That's a nice mix. Aledmys Diaz when he's healthy against lefties. So really, really sets up nice. At some point, maybe Jake Myers returns. Maybe Lance McCullers returns to the rotation. So good things. You always know Astros are going to be in the mix. So that we know. But as far as the Angels, I think you probably recall how much I was digging that offense, at least the top half of it, and kind of felt like they were being sort of overlooked because Ohtani was kind of considered the not necessarily the first round bust, but there's just, you know, because it's hard to sort of quantify his value and the fact that if he gets injured, it can affect, you know, one or the other. And the fact you don't want to have to deal with deciding whether he's a hitter or a pitcher. Of course, Mike Trout, I think people were either on or off. I don't think there was a lot of in the middle. It was just like, you know, I'm either in or out. Brandon Marsh has stepped up incredibly. He's been fantastic. Taylor Ward is the fab darling so far of the season. He should be.
Did you get much Taylor Ward? Did you get Taylor Ward much? But
no. And this is the,
I don't have Taylor Ward anywhere. So I'm a loser who was sleeping on Taylor Ward.
You know what it is because and I've talked about it before. It's because I didn't want to, how do you put this? I was very, my advice in my Sunday update when after he had his home run and stolen base, I, you know, I do my, my weekly fab columns on Saturday.
Do you write a fab column? Flat? Do you have
an occasion
column on Flat? You should let people know about this because this is, I think the, I'm sorry, on about Taylor.
Well, Burton. What I was saying is on the Sunday update, I recommended, I was writing fast, want to get my bids in, want to make sure that I get the advice out, sure. Answer people's questions. And I was like, yeah, you know, people should bid 20 plus. I just kind of threw out a number there. And then when I was doing my bids, I wanted to throw some 60s out there because after I wrote it, I already, you know, forgot what I wrote. I wanted to make sure I at least put decent advice out there. And then I kind of realized, oh, man, it's too late to go back and change. It's going to be the deadline soon. I need to tweak my teams. He's going to go for a lot more than that. So people kind of, you know, they understood, they, you know, read between the lines. And so, yeah, he was one for 50, 60, even 100 and plus in some places. But because I had wrote that, I wanted to keep myself honest. And so I kind of hurt myself by not putting in large bids because I didn't want to seem like I was, you know
what my problem was, and I fully admit this, and it's 100% on me. I didn't spend enough time this winter looking at Taylor Ward. He was just a guy who was never even close to my radar in terms of the draft pool, and I just didn't spend time digging into Taylor Ward. And I find, and this is both a good thing and a bad thing. I find it so important, and this is why you and Matt and others spend time on the DCs, even the cheap, like the cheap for some people, they're a lot of money, but the 150 DCs early is learning the player pool and digging deep into guys who, that when it comes time to draft main event teams or your home league team, you might never consider, is you end up spending a lot of time researching guys who may not have a job, but you want to know, are they any good? What happens if they do get a job? And like, for whatever reason, just Taylor Ward was just never on my radar this winter, and shame on me for that. So that when he had that start, and it was like bid time, and I knew like, this is a guy now, and Joe Maddon is hitting him at the top of the lineup. It like my bias about who Taylor Ward was won the day for me. And that's shame on me. That's why I don't have any Taylor Ward.
What about Brandon Marsh? You have any of him? What do you think of him and his skill set? Obviously,
Brandon Marsh. I'm curious how you think that Brandon Marsh plays out, because when you look at the, if you assume that Joe Adele is not going to be a thing this year. He might be. I'm not saying that he won't be, but let's assume that Joe Adele is gone for a while. The Angels really need Brandon Marsh to be a thing, right? Like they really their outfield depth, you know, like you have Mike Trout, like your outfield is going to be fine. But you have Taylor Ward. But they sort of need Brandon Marsh to work out. So I'm curious what you think about. I haven't heard your take because I have Brandon Marsh nowhere. So I have no particular bias about Brandon Marsh.
Besides the fact that I love him because he reminds me of Jason Worth and even has a little bit of that similar profile as a high average guy and the beard and everything and you know the big strikeouts on occasion. So he's a pretty solid prospect. A former second rounder, was a very highly valued by the Angels organization, and obviously Maddon likes him, right? I mean, he's letting it on a Wednesday against a lefty, one of the best lefties in the league, Shane McClanahan. Brandon Marsh was the leadoff man. So it's interesting. What is weird is that only 360 or so plate appearances in the majors so far since he came up last year, he's striking out at a 34% clip, so that's pretty high. Over the course of his minor league career, he always kind of did strike out at a little bit of a higher rate than average, but is also a big walks guy, always a big on base percentage guy, always double digits, you know, Brandon Nimmo style with the walk. So there could be something there. I just feel like obviously he's been leading off a little more because Tyler Ward has been sitting. I know they've had Otani. I think it's going to be one of those things with the Angels where they're constantly going to be shifting kind of who the leadoff man is, just kind of based on who's hot, which makes sense, right? There's no reason to stay stat, you know, to just kind of stay, you know, solid. But we know that Trout, as long as he's healthy, is going to hit two. Otani's going to, and Rendon going to be there near the top of the lineup. Other than that, the rest of it's going to keep shifting. I think he was a great late round guy. I don't think he's going to hit for a lot of power, but I think he's going to give you a little bit of everything and be nice and solid this year.
It's Joe Maddon, Vlad. If he doesn't have a different lineup every single day, then he's worried that he's going to lose his shtick. Boy, I'm tired of Joe Maddon. But but yeah, no, I think Brandon Marsh is an interesting guy. His I haven't dug that deeply into him. He has a 393 BABIP in 350 major league plate appearances so far. That would be one of the highest BABIPs in like baseball history, if that's his career BABIP. And he's not a super speed guy. Like he's not slow, but he's not he's not Vince Coleman. So it'll be interesting where the batting average normalizes along with the strikeout rate. So the strikeout rate could improve. He can make adjustments. I'm not saying he is a 30% strikeout guy. He could be easily be a 25% strikeout rate, so that as the BABIP comes down, the strikeout rate comes down and the batting average stays the same. But I would worry a tiny bit if the batting average is his largely his carrying skill, that there is risk that his BABIP comes down and the strikeout rate doesn't come down and the batting average shoots down. Again, though, if the batting average shoots down to 235, 240, that's not terrible. If he's also hitting and scoring a lot of runs at the top of that lineup, like that's suddenly a 240 batting average is not hurting your team at all, as it turns out this year. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and getting the balls in play and getting on base, I mean, it's been great. I mean, he basically has as many runs batted in one third of the at-bats that he did last year, and he's running on occasion. So
yep.
NL East, it's early, but the Mets appear to be running away with the division.
Not tonight.
Oh, man.
Ty God. Oh, the bad.
Ty God. No, Ty Devil. McGill.
Yeah, that was bad. Rough. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
But they're the only team in the division currently. Of course, records don't matter now. They're the only team that has a winning record. The rest of these teams are, you know, below.
Tell me, Vlad, assuming Ronald Acuna is healthy the rest of the season, and as of today, there's really no reason to think that he's not. I know he was limping around or something yesterday. Assume Ronald Acuna is healthy the rest of the season. Tell me why the Atlanta Braves are a worse team today than they were when they hoisted the World Series trophy last October. Because I look at this team and think they're basically the same team. Some parts are better, some parts are a little bit worse, but I don't know what's different about Atlanta compared to last year.
No, I mean you're even batting a guy. I mean your team is deep enough that you're batting a former number one overall pick, ninth, or was he a second overall pick? I always forget. Yeah, number one overall pick, Dansby Swanson, is their number nine hitter, and he's been on a little heater himself. Marcelo Ozuna hasn't even really heated up. Matt Olson had that nice first week of the season, kind of been cool since. You know he'll get going. Albie's kind of up and down. Travis d'Arnaud, obviously, keep him healthy, he'll be fine. And then free William Contreras, man. I mean, like, this guy would be like a top 10 catcher in any other, you know, if he was playing in any other team and actually got playing time. So,
they have so much pitching depth, and we know how the season goes. You can't just look at like, who do they have right now? Let's just assume everybody's there all season. Their bullpen is so deep, and that assumes they get nothing from Kirby Yates, this season. And nothing from Mike Soroka this season, but you just add in a Spencer Strider at some point into this rotation. So yeah, the Mets look awesome right now. I'm not crapping on the Mets at all, but I just don't accept the fact that the Braves are not going to be right there this summer. They are going to go on a streak where they're demolishing people, where they're winning, you know, 21 out of 24 games and just blowing people out. I think this team is still very, very good.
Philly is really good. They have a phenomenal team. The lineup is fantastic. I wanted to ask you, you know, I placed my wager on Kyle Schwarber to lead the NL in home runs. He's got 7 so far. CJ Krohn leads the league with 9. I know it's super early. What would you put my percentage chance of winning that futures bet Schwarber to lead, win the NL home run title.
So what would you say that the odds, I'm not ultimately, neither of us are true betting people. What would be the odds of any one player leading the league in home runs? So I would say favorite as of today would have what, a 5% chance, 10% chance to lead. So I think that Schwarber is...
Let me put it like this, if you don't mind. Who's going to hit more home runs than Kyle Schwarber in the National League this year?
Well, I would take the field over Kyle Schwarber pretty comfortably.
Yes.
But if you forced me to pick like one player, like there's lots of guys who could do it, but would I bet on lots of guys? No, I think Kyle Schwarber is still a great pick to lead. So I'm not just sucking up to because I'm on your podcast and I'm hoping to displace Maddie on long term. I think Schwarber's a great bet. So I think the odds of you winning like any futures bet like that is still relatively low. But I think let's reframe the question again. If you went back to Vegas today, or if you're going on to, I guess you're in California, you can't bet online. But if you're in Vegas today, would you make the same bet today? I think you would.
I would. But the funny thing is, he may not even lead his own team in home runs, or potentially he's on a team where three of the top five home run hitters in the National League could all be on the Phillies.
Totally. Like Bryce Harper can go on a heater and lead baseball in home runs pretty easily. Ronald Cunha could go on a heater and lead baseball starting a month later than everybody in home runs. Like there's a lot of guys who could do it, but I think so could Schwarber, and being a left-handed hitter hitting on the top of the lineup, like getting those whatever it is, the 35 extra plate appearances if he's leading off most games could actually make the difference in that. And the good thing is, unlike an MVP type future bet, you're in no way dependent. Who cares if Phillies finish 1-2-3 as long as your guy wins? Mm-hmm. It's not like you're splitting the vote somehow by having a lot of Phillies hitting home runs.
So real quick on the NL Central, looks like a two horse race. We talked about the Brewers. You got the Cardinals in the mix. Milwaukee is a few games lead. And then you've got the kind of the crap end of this division, three teams, Pittsburgh, the Chicago Cubs, and the Cincinnati Reds. If you were to place a bet today on either the Brewers or the Cardinals, who would you say is going to win that division?
Brewers going away. The big difference between you and I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, you like the Cardinals rotation way more than I like the Cardinals rotation, or at least you have more faith in the Cardinals rotation than I have in the Cardinals rotation. Do you think that's fair?
I think that's fair. Although, yeah, I mean, you're talking to somebody that had faith in Daniel Ponce de Leon, right? So,
always have Ponce. It's not even like the guy I'm the most intrigued in on the cards. I'd love to see Jordan Hicks experiment work out. Like it's so nasty, his stuff. I'd love him to work out as a starting pitcher. I'm skeptical about Miles Mikolas still. I don't think it's good or bad. Like I think there's a middle ground, and I think he lands somewhere in the middle ground. And like Wainwright, I think that they're like a certain point you turn into a pumpkin. So I just think there's so many things that need to work out for them. Whereas Milwaukee's rotation, like it's been rough for some. If I were your podcast co-host and I drafted a certain Milwaukee starting pitcher at the back end of the first round in my draft, you're not getting first round value yet. But I just have faith, short of an injury, that that Milwaukee's rotation is still going to be awesome, that Woodruff is going to be awesome, that Peralta is awesome, that Corbin Burns is the best pitcher in the National League. Eric Lauer, I think, is taking a big step forward. You can argue about Adrian Hauser, but if he's your fifth starter in the NL Central, that's going to play. Like, you'll be fine.
What about Ashby, Aaron Ashby, the kid?
Yeah.
Is he going to mix into that rotation? He's going to be one of those guys that's going to be probably dropped a bunch of times in 12ers, maybe 15s at some point? Does he kind of have that Garrett Whitlock spark and become something?
I don't know. I think he's exactly the type of guy that I think that he is a bit of a trap play, because I think that there are some owners, and I've certainly had this with certain guys, where you liked him in the winter, you spent for a guy who ultimately didn't have a rotation spot, you spent a pretty good draft capital on him, right? Like, you weren't getting him for free, Ashby, and you're so good at this, Vlad, because there are many things you get all kinds of accolades for, because people read your Fab column. One of the things you are great at is making the call on, we have to cut Ashby, like having partnered with you. Mm-hmm. You'd be ruthless about like, but Vlad, we spent an X round pick on him. I love Ashby. We agreed he's going to be great. And what you would do is, okay, but look at the schedule for the Brewers for the next like 6 weeks. They don't need a fifth starter this week. They're matched up against, and I'm making this up, don't take this as I've actually looked at Milwaukee's schedule from an Ashby perspective. So nobody take this as actual Ashby advice, but you'd be ruthless of, we will not play Ashby for the next 2 weeks. And therefore there's no reason why we should be keeping Ashby. He's gone. It doesn't matter what we spent on Ashby, and we'll pick him up 2 weeks from now if we want Ashby back. And I think that he's a trap play for some people, because I've certainly been guilty of this with lots of guys, but I think he's going to be great, Vlad. And I think Hauser's one bad start away from losing that spot, and then Ashby gets the spot, and maybe they'll go back to a 6-man rotation. And it's like, Rob, shut up, drop Ashby. It doesn't matter that we liked Ashby. I like Ashby. So I think that you need to be ruthless about him, but you also need to be aggressive in picking him back up. Like, if he starts like pitching three innings, if he starts stridering it and like putting the stats up, get him back. But he is a roster churn guy at this point. Like, you should feel very free to drop Ashby. You should also feel very free to pick up Ashby. Do you agree with that?
I mean, pretty much on point. He's a hard guy to carry on rosters, because a lot of us have injury risks or injured players, or maybe one minor league stash, or then someone hit the IL. It's really hard to hold those kind of guys. I mean, I was in a position in a 12-teamer where I'm looking to draft Tanner Houck he popped back into the rotation. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to hold on for a little bit. Reed Detmers, you got to be ruthless with those cuts. I did not end up cutting Reed Detmers. I gave myself any reason not to. I did not start him this week for his no-hitter, but I noticed that, okay, they're on a 6-man. They hardly get two-step weeks, but he's got Oakland and Texas coming up. So I drafted him for a reason. Maybe that's the reason. That's the calling. Let me wait for him, get those two starts. If he stinks, then whatever. I'll drop him. It's a 12. I'll be fine. But
yeah. But so I would think, after giving up 6 runs in his last and 4 innings in his last outing, a lot of people will be dropping him, and that's okay. And other people will be picking him up. It's hard to have hard and fast rules for these guys. In this season, I think that in 15 team, 12s are a different beast. In 12s, middle relievers are pretty useless. Like, you should never be playing a good middle reliever in a 12 team league, with exceptions, but for the most part. But in a 15 team league, the good middle relievers are very playable. The spot starters are very playable. So the question, if Ashby is now sitting on your waiver wire, is, would I rather him than the following three middle relievers? And take the name out of it. Like, you don't get bonus points in the standings for his name. And right now, honestly, with his walk rate where it's at, he's walking almost as many guys as he's striking out. It's tough to argue that he is the best middle reliever you could possibly have in a 15 team league. I'd certainly want rather the Holmes or King from the Yankees. I'd rather Strider easily from Atlanta. So there's lots of good options out there. Ashby might be one. It's a long season.
Yeah, it's a long season. Even those phenomenal middle relievers will get blasted at some point.
No doubt.
Ending with the National League West, it's kind of a fun fun there at the top with the Dodgers obviously in the mix. Padres and Giants, they're holding their own. Giants are getting healthy at the right time, getting Brandon Belt back hopefully for more than a few days. Evan Longoria is back. The band is getting back together. The pitching is phenomenal. And always have somebody in AAA they can call up. I think that would be decent and contribute. And then the Padres, phenomenal rotation. They have a problem of too many good starters. I mean Nick Martinez goes and strikes out 8 and 4 innings, and he's probably going to get to the pen. Do you have a horse in the race? I don't mean not a horse in the race, but do you have a favorite, or what are you thinking here in this division?
So I bet two win total over unders going into the season, and I thought that the easiest bet in terms of wins going into the season were the Giants. I think I got them at 84.5 wins at some point in the winter, and it's like this was a team that won more games than the Dodgers. And you can say, well, there must be luck. There's regression. They're not going to be as good. They lost Gausman. You can count all the things, and I'm like, but none of those things add up to like 20 wins. Mm-hmm. And I'm so curious to hear how your take on this, because again, you're so good at this, but they're such a mess from a fantasy perspective. So like, they don't care about that. Obviously they want to win games, as they should, but the platooning, as everybody is healthy again and everybody's back again, and they have so many lefties and so many righties, it feels like they're almost cheating. Like, it's like, how do you guys have like a 40-man roster active to be able to do this many platoons compared to everybody else? Right. And yet they have guys that they can literally put a totally different lineup out for a righty and a lefty. And as my podcast partner, Jeff Zimmerman, likes to point out, the annoying thing is the loss of pinch hit for any of their guys in the fifth inning, because the pitcher has changed. So they'll pinch hit for anybody. So how do you deal with Giants players? Put Brandon Belt aside, your boy, because he's a little bit, when healthy, is a different beast. But kind of holistically, how do you deal with Giants bats?
It makes it almost easier. I mean, the best scenario is in your draft champions, you load up on those guys and you just play them by the schedule. It just makes it so much easier, instead of trying to guess based on the schedule who's going to play and what's going to happen, or if someone's going to be cold or hot. You just know, oh, lefties are coming up. Great. Let me get in my Wilmer Flores's and Darren Ruff's. And then you got the righties, make sure I get Lamont Wade and some of those other guys. So it really helps. And then of course, we always look forward to those weekends in Colorado, and you see, oh, three lefties. I know exactly what I'm going to do. And you're just playing the process, right? You just kind of, you're running with it, because that's kind of what the numbers are telling you.
What I suck at, Vlad, and I know we're running tight for time, is I can see that coming. So I see they've got six lefties. It's a crazy week coming up. So I know what's coming, and I run out of bench spots. Like, forget DCs. I find it so hard to carry, even just for a week or two, platoon bats, because I end up going like Monday, because it's never six lefties. It's like Monday to Thursday, this is set up perfectly, and then Friday come, but I have to bench them Friday, because on the weekend they're getting the exact opposite. And then I get three injuries, and this guy who I swore, it's like, this is the perfect pickup, because he has four righties Monday to Thursday, and then three lefties, but he'll be on my bench. And then I have a bunch of injuries, and I'm like, I guess I have to play him. And it's like, I might as well be taking a zero here. And it just always blows up for me in the short bench, seven man bench main event. So I'm just not good at it. I suck at platooning Giants bats. I always get burned by it.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's just one of a million different strategies. And of course, sometimes you can get yourself in a pickle, and sometimes it isn't worth it. So, that makes sense. Rob, man, this was a blast. I'm very happy that you took the bat call here to fill in. I think there is some Wally Pipness going on. So Matty better.
He'll get his act together. He knows what's what.
Yeah. So any last second thoughts or anything you want to promote?
Vlad, anytime you want to talk baseball with me, I am happy to be there. So great chatting with you, and can't wait to see you again soon.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. So for the great Rob Silver, this is Vlad Sedler, and we're the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your host on Twitter at @_MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.